Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
The New Statesman.
Hi, I'm Anoush Kellyan, Britain editor at The New Statesman and host of this podcast. And joining me in the studio, I have Freddie Haywood, our political correspondent, and Rachel Cunliffe, our associate political editor. And they've been digging around in our mailbag and have brought a couple of questions from you to discuss today. So, Rachel, let's go with you first. What have you chosen?
So, this is a question from Joe S, who asks, have Labour sort of gotten away with the £28 billion thing? They seem to have taken a bit of a hammering, but I expected it to be far worse. Can I just say that I love referring to this as the £28 billion thing?
Yeah. It has become that.
Yeah. Rather than the £28 billion question, which has become a bit of a cliche now.
Yeah.
So for any of our listeners who have been away for a while, this was Labour promising to spend £28 billion a year on a green industrial transition if they won the election. And they initially announced this in 2021 at conference. Rachel Reeves, Shadow Chancellor, it was a big sort of pledge. And this has been watered down and equivocated over time. And in the end, they completely U-turned on it at the beginning of this month. And now the spending plans are down by almost 75% on this issue. And our senior editor, George Eaton's cover story in the New Statesman about this a few weeks ago explains exactly how that decision came about. But what we're trying to answer is whether or not they got away with such a big U-turn. What do you guys think, Freddie? Do you think they've managed to weather the storm?
I mean, it's never going to be the turning point in a general election campaign when someone just, you know, changes how much money they're going to spend on a specific policy but retains the policy itself. So we have to remember that they're still trying to decarbonise the electricity system by 2030. They're keeping the Great British Energy, the National Wealth Fund, the Home Insulation Plan, even if the latter's been defunded to some extent. I think the big problem is that it fitted into a broader narrative that Keir Starmer lacks principles. He doesn't have the conviction to radically change the country at a juncture in politics when radicalism and a sense of grasping the problems that the country faces was needed. So I think that's the risk. Are we going to see that immediately play out? I'm not sure. I think the Tories will draw on it going forwards. And I also think they're still going to accuse the government of being profligate with the public finances because they've retained so many of the policies that were already there. I think as well, if we look at the actual, you know, chronology of what happened, you saw it immediately being overshadowed by Rochdale. And then this week it's been overshadowed by the debate in Parliament over Gaza. So I don't think there was necessarily the space for it to get the attention that it might have needed. And also, let's remember that we've been having this debate for a very long time now. You know, it's been 2 or 3 months when there's been briefings about whether it's going to go, whether it's going to stay. So, you know, any impact or negative effect on polling might have already happened.
Yeah, it was a bit of a slow motion U-turn, really.
It's a torturous death.
Yeah, they were U-turning on it for a while. Blocking up the road.
Yeah, I think what is interesting about the way that decision got made is the attacks from the Conservatives for months, years actually, since the policy was announced, have been, you know, every time that they're challenged on anything, it's always been, oh, but look, Labour, they want to get out the chequebook, £28 billion. Like, that's become kind of like a tagline, like a catchphrase that they were using, Rishi Sunak was using at PMQs. Every time he got asked a difficult question, it was, well, you know, we may be having issues with X, Y, Z, but look at Labour, they want to spend £28 billion. And there was a feeling that it had sort of become, that figure had become an albatross, essentially, around the necks of Labour, wanting to show that they were financially responsible. The thing is, though, that having had months of back and forth, will they, won't they drop it, when they announced that they were dropping it, it took seconds for the Tory comms machine to just switch gears and go from Labour are financially irresponsible to Keir Starmer flip-flops on anything, you can't trust him. And there was a really interesting column in the Telegraph in that week by a Telegraph comment editor who was really against the 28 billion as a, as a policy, but was writing how that meant that you couldn't trust Keir Starmer with anything because he says one thing and then does another. And so I think Labour may have been naive if they thought that ditching the policy would protect them, sort of be a defensive move, because all that it did is it just switched the attack line to something else.
Well, yes. And also, you know, whatever they're planning on carrying on spending on these issues is still borrowing, isn't it? Four billion or something, somewhere around that. And to be honest, once you're in the billions, it's very difficult to sort of envisage that as just a person who's never seen £1 billion. Yeah, so I think the attack line can kind of stay. But it's reinforced with this idea that I think that the Conservatives have had some traction on, which is of, like you said, Freddie, of Keir Starmer as someone who changes his mind, flip-flopper, Captain Hindsight, you know, someone who blows with the wind and no one knows what he truly believes. And that's something that does come up, even from people who are saying that they're going to vote for Labour this time round, that they don't really know what they stand for. They don't really know sort of what his politics are. And I think that's probably the bigger vulnerability with a U-turn like this. But it did come up. I think I said this on the podcast with you and Ben Walker about the by-election results last week. It came up in Kingswood, where there's quite a lot of manufacturing jobs. Rolls-Royce, Airbus, BAE Systems. People care about the future of these industries, and they were bringing it up on the doorstep. It wasn't just a sort of Westminster issue. So people have noticed, I think.
Yeah. I mean, that just plays into the broader narrative about whether Labour will be able to grasp the issues. But I do think we should also, you know, look ahead, and I do think it prefigures some of the problems that Labour will encounter in government. We always have to remember that the problems aren't just going to disappear because Keir Starmer walks through the number 10 threshold. The votes will keep coming, the economy won't just suddenly grow, the NHS will still be in a mess.
Ceilings in schools made out of dodgy concrete will keep falling on children's heads.
Exactly. So the fiscal bind that Rachel Reeves has imposed on the party will keep coming into tension, I think, with the broader prospect or the broader desire within the party to deal with public services or, you know...
And the appetite in the country.
Move to net zero. Exactly. And that tension isn't going to disappear.
And after the break, it's your turn to ask a question, Freddie. Can you give us a clue on what you've chosen?
I can indeed. Okay, we're going to be talking about the culture war.
Again.
If you're subscribed to The New Statesman, you can get all of our episodes ad-free on the New Statesman app. You can get it on both iOS and Android. Just search for New Statesman on the App Store or Google Play Store. We'll be back after this.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
So, Freddie, what's the question?
So this is a question from Holly, who asks, I've heard speculation that the Tories' election strategy is not really about culture war and wedge issues or evoking fear of Labour spending plans. It's about showing Starmer as indecisive and untrustworthy and the Labour Party as divided.
Yeah. OK, so I don't know whether Holly has some kind of insight into into CCHQ. But I think she's probably onto something here. It does look like the focus of Conservative attacks have shifted from some of those issues to, like we were talking about in the first half of the podcast, Keir Starmer being a flip-flopper and untrustworthy. But also, I think sort of almost ever since they brought David Cameron back, they've kind of reverted to a 2015-style election messaging, which was all about the long-term economic plan. Sort of, it's been painful, but, you know, we're all in it together and stick with us type you know, post-austerity kind of messaging. And I think that's what they're doing now. So they're saying the plan is working and on the flip side, Labour has no plan. We've turned a corner on the economy. That was something Jeremy Hunt was saying in the autumn statement.
Which I think goes hand in hand with don't go back to square one.
Yeah, and don't
Labour.
Go back to square one
corners
with Labour.
And squares.
Yeah, so this idea is we're making some progress on what we've committed to achieve. Don't let Labour mess it up, which I think was always going to be a more sensible strategy than bringing up some of these issues that may, you know, maybe disquieting to sort of a small part of the population, but aren't necessarily first order, sort of the most salient voting issues that people have. What do you think, Freddie? Do you think they're going to sort of go for this over culture war?
Yeah, I do. I was speaking to someone last week, and they were essentially saying that even though they're working extremely hard to get flights off to Rwanda, for instance, they still don't think, even if they do, that they will focus on migration in the election just because the economy is the key concern of voters. And I think that's playing out now. We're seeing briefings much more about tax cuts. The focus is on the budget. It's not so much on immigration or some of these other issues, and not that immigration I think is a culture war, it's just a policy issue, but you see what they're trying to do there. So yeah, but you've got to remember the past year or so has been full of Number 10 switching and changing its strategy, and I think you're right, they have sort of settled now on an economic message. I think they will still go for Keir Starmer and trying to, as we discussed earlier, try to paint him as indecisive and untrustworthy. They're going to hark back to his period as DPP as the chief prosecutor. Whether that's successful or not, I think Labour feel quite confident that they can rebut those charges and essentially say that Keir Starmer represents the sort of strong state, the law and order public servant that many people might respect.
See, I don't see it like that at all. I think there are two distinct Conservative election campaigns sort of running in parallel at the moment or on top of each other. One of which is the go back to the economy. This is Isaac Levito's big thing. Stick with the plan. The plan's working. With the grown-ups, we brought back David Cameron.
Yeah.
And that is the core of the campaign. But there is a significant faction of the Conservative right that doesn't think that will work.
Yeah.
I can see it isn't working.
Yeah.
And genuinely thinks that the culture wars is the way to, if not win the election, then to mitigate the losses. And you've kind of got to look at which MPs are at risk of losing their seats where. If your main challenger is the Lib Dems in the leafy south where environmental issues are very important, you're going to have a very different election strategy personally as an MP to if you are in the north red wall seats or your seat is at risk from reform. And for a substantial number of MPs, that policy works for them better, even if they think that it won't win them a general election. I think it was this time last year, Lee Anderson came out and said the next election will be fought on the culture wars and the trans issue and there's that. Mm. And what I think you're seeing with Sunak is he's trying to go for this boring, technocratic, stick with the economy, it's working plan. But every so often, he sort of throws something to MPs on the right and it doesn't always work and it's quite disjointed. And you can see that from the other week when Starmer asked him a serious question at PMQs and Sunak immediately went, or he doesn't know what a woman is, when Esther Jai, the mother of the murdered transgender teenager, Brianna Jai, was in Parliament. And that is a line that Sunak has used against Starmer at PMQs repeatedly. He gets asked an economic question, he throws back a culture wars answer. Obviously, that was a very unfortunate exchange because of the circumstances around it. But you can see that strategy playing out. And I think that's why it's that there are, while it won't work in a general election campaign, there are individual MPs and individual seats who think that it will help them. Interestingly, I've got some polling from King's College London that have been tracking attitudes to woke. So this is from at the end of last year. Only 1 in 7 people think of themselves as being anti-woke. Now, that is an increase, but it's still a minority. 15% of the public consider themselves to be anti-woke. 16%, so basically the same, consider themselves to be woke. The most common response is that people don't know what these terms mean. 44% of people don't know what they mean. Another 21% say they don't identify with either label. So woke or anti-woke is a kind of minority view. Interestingly, 4 in 10 conservative leavers consider themselves to be anti-woke, as do 3 in 10 older men. So you get a higher proportion of people identifying with being anti-woke among traditional Conservative voters, or in particular people who voted Conservative in 2019. So for the Conservatives who are trying to piece together the scraps of the 2019 coalition, this issue does matter mm-hmm. to those voters. It just doesn't matter to the country as a whole. And that kind of tells you something about the difficulties in this particular election campaign, because they're trying to cling on to something while reaching out across the country, and you can't really do both.
But that's why these MPs are angry, right? They're yeah. angry because it's not the strategy. They're angry that Number 10 haven't said they're going to leave the ECHR. They're angry that because Number 10's not going hard on these issues. So it's not the strategy as such. But I think I agree there are divisions within the party. But many MPs are concerned they're going to lose their seats because Number 10 aren't focusing on it.
Yeah, and I think what you're getting is the sort of baseline Number 10 strategy overlaid with a bit of culture yeah. wars to give it a bit of a anti-woke flavour
to throw something to those MPs
yeah.
who are unsatisfied yeah, with the strategy. I do remember when I interviewed Damien Green, who is the representative of the One Nation group of MPs who seem to be sort of winning this argument at the moment. I asked him about a Get Rwanda Done type election, and he said that's a fantasy, and it seems that, you know, they're not going to go for that. But we'll see whether planes take off and whether that changes the calculation. Because like you say, the strategy has been all over the place. Well, thanks for those great questions to our listeners. And thanks to everyone who submitted a question this week. We do read all of them, so please keep them coming in. If you'd like to send us one, you can just go to newstatesman.com/youaskus. And if you're listening on Spotify, just scroll down on the episode page and leave a reply. And YouTube viewers can drop a question in the comments. You've been listening to the New Statesman podcast with me, Anoush Shakelian, and my colleagues, Rachel Cunliffe and Freddie Haywood. We'll be back next week. This episode was produced by Catherine Hughes.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.